Yud Tes Elul, Sunday the 14th of September, Rabbi Doron Kornbluth, Success and Failure. This week's Torah Way has been sponsored by Family Charles Bloom, Lil Nishmas, Mas Rochel, Bas Menachem Manis, Aleha Shalom.
Good morning, it's an honor, a kavod, to be here with you in London, Torah Way. Just a word about myself, since we'll be together for a half an hour. My name is Doron Kornbluth. I grew up in Canada, and I now live in Eretz Yisrael. I hope you'll understand my English. As we say in Canada, we in Canada are halfway between America and civilization, so hopefully we'll be able to understand each other. I want to share with you an idea, and this is an idea that at first will sound very simple. It may be that at the end you find it very simple. I find that as we progress through this idea, it can actually be life-altering. To get started, let's just ask for a show of hands. Who here has been to America? Very good. Been to Washington, D.C.? Oh, okay, most people here. That's very nice. So if you remember Washington, D.C., it's an interesting place to go. So there's a bunch of monuments there that are quite famous, at least in America. You have the Washington Monument, tall, huge obelisk. You have the White House, the Capitol building. Jefferson Memorial is one of the early presidents. Jefferson is like a round rotunda. But by far, the most impressive, to my mind, the most impressive monument in Washington, D.C. is the Lincoln Memorial. Most of you have probably heard of President Abraham Lincoln. There's a huge monument, all the civil rights marches and everything that happened in America happened there. Huge statue of him with his arms down on his legs. Massive thing. In fact, Abraham Lincoln is actually one of the heroes of America. By the way, you should review your American history a little bit, because now that I know there's a vote that Scotland is thinking of perhaps leaving, America is thinking of coming back. So it's good to get back in touch, you know, bygones be bygones. So Abraham Lincoln is one of the great heroes of America. He won the Civil War, kept the country together, freed the slaves. His image is on the American money a couple of times. Honest Abe, an honest, ethical person. He's a role model, a hero. When you ask historians of American history who the great, successful presidents of America are, without a doubt, they will list in the top three or the top five, Washington, right? Lincoln. Number three, maybe Roosevelt, if they think so. I don't. Reagan, whatever. They're all different answers. But Lincoln is always in the top few. So what's fascinating, this is one of the most successful in American terms, right? One of the most successful presidents, great historical figure. I want to read to you a few things about his life. I'm going to move quickly. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this. But there's a very important point here that this is going to open up for us. February 1809, born in a one-room log cabin. 1812, brother dies. 1815, briefly attends school. 1818, kicked in the head by a horse, and for a brief time is thought to be dead. 1818, when his mother dies at the age of 9. 1828, his sister dies. I won't mention all the lost elections. He lost more elections than Shimon Peres. Begins courtship with Mary Owens, breaks off. He enters into severe depression. This man, by current standards, would unquestionably be called a manic depressive, would go into a dark room for days at a time, wouldn't eat. Seriously, he'd probably be on medication today. Three-year-old son, Edward, dies after a two-month illness. His father dies young. He's finally, through kind of a weird quirk, he's elected to the presidency. And he has another son. While he's president, one of his children dies in the White House. His wife goes crazy, enters a sanatorium, never really recovers. He has financial debts his entire life. His army generals fail. He takes over command, and tens of thousands of soldiers are killed. There's 12,000 soldiers killed on one day. Tens of thousands are killed. It's amazing. Finally, how does his life end? He's killed. He's assassinated. So it's a fascinating thing. I first came across this. I'm a Canadian, as I mentioned. My wife is American. That's my intermarriage. And I came across this traveling, visiting my wife's family in Chicago, in Illinois, where they have big pictures of Lincoln. He's their home state hero. And the word under the picture, the silhouette of his face, is perseverance. Because that's the first lesson people take. That, wow, he had such a hard life, a pathetic life. Right? Financial difficulties, personal difficulties, tremendous problems, and yet he was so successful. And it's true. It's certainly a lesson in perseverance. But what I want to do is explore this idea. This idea that you can have a successful person, by outside standards at least, and yet When you look at his life, my gosh, what horrible things he went through. It wasn't just him, by the way. Take a few other quick examples. Vincent van Gogh, famous painter, his paintings sell for tens of millions of dollars today, right? Guess how many paintings he painted during his life. We know of 1,500. That means if he's producing one piece of art, a sketch or a painting a week, 50 a year, that's over 30 years he's producing art. He sold one his entire life. And by the way, to put salt in the wound, his brother Theo was the preeminent art dealer of the time. All realms of business, politics, art, every realm of human experience, you see this amazing coincidence, so to speak, where success, achievement, those same people have tremendous difficulty in failure. It's not the image that we think of. Somebody is born with a certain muzzle and they go great. In fact, it's not just human beings, it's not just public figures. Let's go closer to home. Let's go to Yidden. Let's go to Am Yisrael. We know that between Pesach and Shavuos, to Lag Bomer, depending on your minhagim, there's no marriage, there's no chasanas. Why do we not get married during that time? Rabbi Akiva's students died, right? He had 12,000 pairs of students. They died. Why did they die? Lo nagu kabozo. They didn't treat each other with enough respect. By the way, if we met any of these people today, we would think they were the most respectful people we've ever met in our lives. Let's not judge them by our standards. By their standards, Talmidim, students of the great Rabbi Akiva, much more was expected of them. So they died in a plague. Now, here's a question. Was Rabbi Akiva himself to blame for what happened? Absolutely not. Chazal do not chat. He was the perfect teacher. They didn't take that lesson correctly. That being said, was he successful with them? No, he was not. They died. He rebuilt Torah. He took five close Talmidim, rebuilt everything we have in Torah, comes from his five Talmidim. An incredible thing when you think about one person could do, or five people could do compared to the huge numbers, right? Even Rabbi Akiva did not achieve success in all ways. That's a pretty big failure. Again, not his fault, but it didn't succeed. Obviously, we know the examples. Very simple, true or false. Here's the before the true or false. Aside from traveling around, I travel around and teach in different parts of Europe and America. When I'm in Eretz Yisrael, I'm a tour guide. I take schools and communities and from families around. True or false? The favorite place I have to take people in Eretz Yisrael is the Kever of Moshe Rabbeinu. How do you know it's false? We're going to get there in a few weeks. There's two reasons. Right? Number one, he never made it into Eretz Yisrael. Number two, Pasuk says that Hashem hid the place of his burial. We know so it wouldn't become a Makom Avodah Zarah. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu himself, his fondest wish, the thing that he wanted, we can hop on a plane. He didn't make it into Eretz Yisrael. Mefarshim differ in exactly why, what the problem was. Simply speaking, he hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. He did not succeed in his fondest wish. Miriam spoke Lashon Hara. Aaron didn't stop. The Chet Ha'Egel, depending on different Mefarshim. It's amazing, by the way, that we don't look at the Avos, the Imaos, our role model. We don't look at them as being perfect. They had successes. They had failures. In fact, this is true not just of humans. It's true plants. Plants grow, die, go back to earth. Animals have a life cycle. The sun itself is burning out. Don't worry, we have 5 billion years. But it's interesting that the way that Hashem made the Bria, built into the Bria, is this idea of tragedy, setback, failure. In fact, the Mukubalim teach us this. Tikkuni Zohar, it says that the way that Hashem made the world, he wanted to go, so to speak. Hashem could have made the world whoever he wanted. But the way that he chose to make it was a sort of a step-by-step process. Kadosh Baruch Hu is kulo ruchani, he's all spiritual, fully spiritual. He's making a gashmi world. And he did, this is a metaphor, of course, none of this actually happened, but the metaphor is that he built these kalim, these vessels, and I imagine it that he was pouring his divinity, some kind of beautiful golden liquid, a metaphor, of course. And, of course, the vessels can't hold, nothing can hold Hashem. Vessels break, they shatter all over the universe. And our job, every time you learn Torah, every time you say a bracha, every time you beat your yitzhara, every time you give tzedaka, we are fixing the vessels. This is called, in Kabbalistic terminology, shvirat hakelim, the breaking of the vessels. So I have a question for you. Did Hashem know the vessels were going to break? By definition, yes. It's the aleph base of belief in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, belief in Hashem. He's omniscient, he knows everything. So if he knew they were going to break, why did he go through that whole rigmarole, that whole process? Just send the little pieces all over. Why do you have to do it? They asked this question, by the way, about Adam and Chava. Did Hashem know that Adam and Chava, were going to sin in the Garden of Eden and have to be kicked out? Well, of course he knew. So why did he do that? Why didn't he just start them outside? That's an easy answer. What's the answer to that? They didn't know. He knew, but they didn't know. They had that free choice, right? Hashem's knowledge, Rambam says, unlike our knowledge. He knows it doesn't affect. But you can't say that about my question, because there was no consciousness, there was no people. So again, why did Hashem create a system that broke? The answer that is given, it's not my answer, I've seen it inside the Sfarim. The answer that is given is very profound. Hashem created the world with brokenness, failure, setback, tragedy, because he wanted our lives to have that as well. He did not want to create a perfect world where everything was easy and everything was good and everything was successful. He didn't create the world that way. The point being, we sometimes wish that life was perfect. We want shalva. We want peace to be able to sit and learn and do mitzvahs and not be bothered by all the nuisances and the annoyances of life. If Hashem wanted us to have a life like that, he would have given us a life like that. He didn't. This brings me to a number of lessons that I want to share with you. I'm moving quickly. We have a short amount of time. First lesson. Failure, tragedy, setback, difficulty is part of life. We should accept it. Every human being, including those of us in our community, every human being looks at other people and gets a false impression. We think that there are people around that have it all good. I want to tell you, I'm not a wealthy person, but I've been around a number of many wealthy people, multi-millionaires, wealthy people. I have not met one that does not have serious issues in their life. I've been around, Baruch Hashem, I've been zeichet to be around Talmidei Chachamim and Gedolei Torah. Their lives are not easy. They're not. We think that other people have it simple, have it good, and we feel, I wish I could just get rid of it. No. It's okay. Everybody has, and Bezrat Hashem, we will have less and less when Mashiach comes, and we should help each other. But the reality is, the first lesson is, it's okay to have problems, serious problems, difficulties, challenges. Everyone does. It can be, Chalil, it can be in a marriage, it can be with children, it can be parnasa, it can be help, whatever. It's okay. It means you're normal. Number two. These failures, these difficulties, can make you a better person. I'm going to give you a way to understand this idea. Imagine that you could choose one of two friends for your child. You had some kind of power that you could determine that friend A would be your child's best friend for life, or friend B would be your child's best friend for life. And when you're looking at it thinking, wow, it's kind of a weird thing. You have that possibility. You have that possibility, hypothetically, right? So friend A is an amazing young person. Grew up in a beautiful family. Always had support and love. Always had money. Always everything. Good looking, athletic, smart, good learning. Everything. Like, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful kid. Friend B went through difficulties. Difficult family. But boy, they brought themselves together. They made sure to give themselves a good chinuch. They've developed into a wonderful person. Which friend would you choose for your child? Friend A or friend B? It's an interesting question, isn't it? Most people I've asked choose friend B. Why? Friend A may be wonderful, but they have no kalim, they have no capability of helping my child deal with real life. Because they haven't experienced anything hard. Meaning, difficulty, challenge, changes us. It can bring out the best in us. Lesson three. It's not automatic. It's not like everybody who has problems becomes better. There are people who have problems and they just keep having problems. There's people where Hashem is sending them certain messages and they ignore the messages. And they go through life just complaining and not changing. In order for the difficulties to help us, we have to focus on them. I was lucky to sit by Rav Volbe for a number of years, learning from Shlomo Volbe. I will not claim I was a close Talmud, but I did sit by him for many years, and I spoke to him on many occasions. And he used to say that when something is going wrong, it's like a metal detector, right? A guy's walking on a beach with a metal detector looking for gold or silver. It's something is saying, pay attention to me. Meaning, this is how we're supposed to deal with our issues. Take a look at the pattern. One person is going to have trouble keeping a job. They keep getting, politely or impolitely, kind of pushed out of their work. They've had five jobs. There's a problem. There's something they're doing. There's a problem with how they're dealing with other people in terms of parnassa and work and responsibility. Getting a lot. That's an indication. What do they have to fix? There's another person, I know somebody personally, who was on his fifth marriage. Now, lo aleinu, you know, divorce is a terrible market in the Western world. It's hitting on Israel as well. Okay, many of good people have gone through it. But when a person is on their fifth marriage, that's usually an indication that there's something wrong in what they're doing. Right? Should have gotten that far. Look at a pattern. If you find that every Erev Shabbos you are yelling at your children or your grandchildren, that's a pattern. That's not okay. I'm saying this because it happens to me. So it happens. We understand the pressure. It's not okay. It's something that we have to, when you look at a pattern, this, it's not that problems create better people. Better people look at their problems and figure out what they can do. They work with them. Pay attention to them. Okay. Lesson number four. I'm going to quote you something. And this is something that I could not say myself, but I can quote you. Many of you have heard of the Piashitzner Rebbe. Rebbe the Warsaw Ghetto, Kolomno Shapiro. He was the Eish Kodesh, exactly right. So before the war, before the Shoah, he was a well-known Hasidic educator. He had Hasidim, he had Talmidim, he was an Adam Mufursam. He was known in Poland, he was a leader. And of course, we all know the history of what happened. I don't have to go in detail what happened in the Warsaw Ghetto. To make a very long story, tragic story short, he lost his wife, he lost his kids, his Talmidim, it was a tragedy. He had a tish in the ghetto. And people would come to him, right? I don't know what kind of a meal they actually had, but they would come to the tish. And he would share his divrei chizuk and his drushas. And on Motzei Shabbos, he would write down his notes of what he had spoken about over Shabbos. And he hid them in a metal milk crate, put them in a note underground under the building, saying, if my writings survive the war, please send them to my brother, Rabbi Shapiro, give the address. Polish worker in the 1950s is excavating, renovating a house, finds the milk crate, sends them to his brother. His book get published, as you said, sir, Eish Kodesh. It is an amazing spiritual odyssey to learn this work. You see a Gadol B'Torah, a Talmud Chacham, going through what he went through and speaking about it, and it's personal. It's amazing. He says something in his writings that is an amazing thing. I'm paraphrasing, but this is what he says. He says, before the war, my days were filled with Torah and Tefillah, with study and prayer, and I felt close to Hashem. Now that I'm in the midst of this nightmare, I feel closer to Hashem than ever. I can never say such a thing. But he said it. God forbid we should even have a million, anything compared to anything. But the idea is life-changing. It is through the difficulties that we grow. It is through the hardship that we can actually make change and get close to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. A Talmud once wrote Rav Huttner, Rosh Hashiva Pachad Yitzhak, once wrote Rav Huttner, and Chaim Blanish said, that he once wrote Rav Huttner and he said that he had left the yeshiva and he wrote how it was very hard. He was out working and he had all these dreams that he'd be learning and he would be davening with the minyan and everything would be going like great, and suddenly he's out of yeshiva a couple years and things are falling apart. And he's having a hard time. And Rav Huttner wrote him back a letter. It's in the sefer of his letters. He wrote him a letter and said, if I had received a letter from you that things were going well, I would say, good, tov. It's a good letter. Now that I've received a letter from you, how hard things are and how it bothers you, I say that your letter is tov me'od, is excellent. That's the key. The key is focusing, experiencing, and growing from the hard times. We have now, it's about 10 days before Rosh Hashanah, less than 2 weeks till Rosh Hashanah. And we know that Rosh Hashanah is about Malchus. Accepting Hashem, it's not a theoretical, you know, oh, he's my king. It's accepting Hashem in our hearts as Melech. And then we have Zeres Mei Tshuva and Yom Kippur. And if you're like me, you know, sometimes, like, you know, Erev Yom Kippur, I'm sitting there thinking, I haven't even sat down and, like, I have to, like, focus, like, when am I, because you have so little time between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, like, when am I going to sit down and actually think through my year? What am I doing? You don't. Rosh Hashanah is about Malchus. But now we have time to focus on depth, on what does that mean, on who we are. Rambam says, Yazo Rosh Hadarcha, we're supposed to leave our path, right? We're supposed to leave. It's not just enumerating the chataim, the sins that we had. That's important. But it's figuring out who we are and who we're supposed to be. Shlomo Rebbe, Nesiv HaShalom, says, there are two ways that a person figures out what they're here for. In olden times, when we had Nevi'im, Bais Rishon, we had Nevi'im, you wanted to figure out what you're here for. Why did Hashem create me? Right? When you see a radio, a Sony radio, so we're very pleased to say that, like, Mr. Sony didn't put an extra wire in his radio. Everything's got a reason, right? Kadosh Baruch Hu did not put any extra people on the planet. We're here, you have a reason to be here. Each of us has a role. So how do you figure out what it is? 2,500 years ago, when there were prophets, you go to the prophet, go to the Navi. He would look into your neshama, he'd tell you. He'd tell you, what are you here for? We don't have that today. So it's hard enough to do what you're supposed to do, but what happens when you don't even know what you're supposed to do? We spend most of our lives walking around not really sure. What am I here for? We are here for something. Nesiv HaShalom says there's two ways. By the way, I've seen this in the writings of the Baalei Mussar as well. Parallel. That, one, look at what you're good at. What am I here for? What are my talents? What are my skills? What do I get up with energy to do? What gives me chiyus? What can I contribute? What do I like? What stands out? Use your talents, your skills. Hashem gave them to each of us. We all have them in unique ways. Second way. This is B'chol Levavcha. Levavcha, right? The two Yetzers. This is exactly the two Lamas, right? The two guys are the Levavcha. So, look at your difficulties. Where am I having trouble? What is my pattern of problem through my life that it just, this area, you may never become world famous in that area, but by conquering that area, by just making a little bit of improvement without fully conquering it, you're famous in Shemayim for that. Because there's two things that we each have to do, based on this Nesiv HaShalom. There's two things we each have to do. One, contribute, give our outside talents, contribute to the world, help, improve, help Am Yisrael. Two, do the tikkun, fix ourselves. Find out, one person just has an angry temperament. It's not their fault, they were grown up with an angry temperament. It can be changed. One person is miserly. They just, lefi what they have, they're not giving a lot of tzedakah. It can change, they can become a generous person. One person, and we've all gone through times like this, will be davening three times a day, but in their heart of hearts knows they haven't davened in years. It's empty. As people who daven regularly, we all go through periods like this. It's okay. But it's not okay. That's a problem. And it's a problem we shouldn't ignore. Don't feel bad about it. It's life. The point is as follows. And this is how I want to focus in the last couple minutes we have together. The point is, normal human beings, good people, good Jews, like we all try to be, we naturally prefer ignoring our problems. And we know, you have to do tshuva, it's Elul time, Yeseres Mei Tshuva are coming, Yom Kippur, okay, you have to do tshuva. So, it's natural for us to focus on, like, a few pratim, okay, you know, I came to davening a little bit late, I have to be better there, you know, I wasn't good at this, you know, I spoke Lashon Hara three times, that's all important, I'm not putting it down. But sometimes, it's a bit of an excuse. It's a bit of a crutch. Meaning, it's easier to do tshuva on the small things than to focus on the big things. On the dark, on the real path, on really who we are. What am I here for? There's a fellow that in America, he's known as Sarno, he's a back pain specialist. And he has a whole theory that very often, he just looks at the fact that, like, people can, there's so many instances of back pain. I'm speaking with a group of, people my age, you know, middle-aged men, so statistically probably a third of us have serious back pain. It's like ridiculous, right? Why are so many people having back pain? So his theory is that actually some of it's serious, and you have to go to a hospital or Khalil and take care of it. But often the body can actually fix the back pain itself. But it doesn't. Why? Because it prefers just having physical pain to deal with rather than a person dealing with all their emotional stuff. It's a replacement kind of a mechanism. Now you can accept or reject the method and his idea, but the emes of it is so true. When a person is trying to become a great painter, or a person is a great painter, you know what they do to protect what they do? They sit on a chair, not all of them, but there's guys who do this. They sit on a chair, and they tie their hands, and they fall off the chair. Why? Because you and me, if we fall off a chair, what do? You put your hands out. Painter can't do that, because his hands are priceless, right? People have natural reflexes to a normal person. I will sacrifice my hand, I'll deal with pain in my hand, rather than my head go down. Right? Painter's not going to want that. People naturally focus on things that are less painful, less difficult, and ignore the things that are more painful, more difficult. But that's our job at this time of year. And the amazing thing is, we are not expected to become people that we're not. We are not expected to be perfect. We are not expected to fix everything 1 year or in our lives we're here. But, let's take the time to realize, spend some time now before Rosh Hashanah and during Seder Yemei Teshuva, to realize each of us, without exception, has something fundamental that we can improve. Not minor things, fundamental things. Hasidus Rebbe once said that if you think you're finished, you're finished. He wasn't talking about minor, I came to shul 3 times late. I'm not saying that's minor. I'm just saying, we're here to grow in a serious way, and we can. Let's summarize. We started out with this idea that in all areas of business, politics, art, whatever, success and failure tend to go together. The lessons that I tried to draw out from this, and I hope at least one of them will resonate and will help you, as it's trying to help me, it helps me as I share them, is that it's okay to have problems, even serious ones. We all do. 2, they can actually help us. 3, only if you focus on them. 4, it's worth focusing on them. Because the difficulties, that's when our hearts open up. That's when we can really get close to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's what really motivates us to change. God willing, we'll do it without the difficulties. That's the best path. But when they come, use them. Focus on them. It's okay to have problems. Hashem sent us this world. This is a difficult world. It's not simple. We say in davening, we said this morning, Yotzer Or Borei Choshech. Right? Why Yitzir and Bria? Yotzer Or. He forms light and he creates darkness. According to the Mekubalim, the 4 different levels, the 4 different worlds, right? They go sort of in downwards land. You know what? Yitzir, Yotzer Or, is a lower level than Bria, than Borei Choshech. It's a higher level. Olam Asiya, right? And then you have Yitzir, Bria, and Atzilus, like. The meaning that the choshech, the difficulty, is at a higher level spiritually than the ease. So yes, we have a beautiful, wonderful life. We are so privileged that we have Torah, and we have Shabbos, and we have Yontif, and we have families. Compared to anyone on the planet, look what we have. What a schus, the Moda Hashem a million times a day. But the difficulties we have, that's one of the greatest chesed that Hashem gave. To work through the difficulty, to grow from the difficulty, to reach out to Hashem from the difficulty. I bless us that we shouldn't have difficulties, but if we do have them, that we should use them well. Thank you. Thank you.